Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center presents Doc Talk, an informative health series educating our community on the services provided at Peace Health. We will begin with our host, George Henry, after these messages.
You're not feeling well? You twist your ankle? Or you have that pain in your shoulder that just doesn't go away? There is an alternative to the emergency room. It's a Peace Health walk-in clinic. There's no appointment necessary, and you may have to wait, but you could see someone today. It's open 6 days a week in the 380 building just across from Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center. The Peace Health Walk-In Clinic, your local health partners.
The spirit of healing is Peace Health.
When I think about the spirit of healing, I think the most important thing is that it's a team effort and everybody's on the same page.
At the end of the day, all we really want to do is help people.
It's not just a business, it's a mission.
Peace Health continues to reach out and bring healthcare to people who otherwise wouldn't have it.
Healing, compassionate, joyful. That's what Peace Health is about.
Hear stories of our healing spirit at peacehealth.org.
Welcome to our May edition of Doc Talk. I'm with Dr. Michael Wilder and Dr. William Foster, Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center here in Florence. And May is Stroke Awareness Month. And good day to both of you.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
So let's get a little bit of your specifics. Now, you work in the emergency department.
Correct.
What responsibilities do you have, say, when patients come in? This is Dr. Foster.
Well, when they come in to quickly ascertain whether they have symptoms that are consistent with a stroke, and then getting a CAT scan very rapidly, because that answers some big questions about how we treat a stroke. And as soon as we have that CAT scan done and they have symptoms consistent with a stroke, calling up Riverbend to talk to the neurologist over there, because we don't have any of those specialists located in our hospital.
And Dr. Wilder, are you is pretty much the same responsibility for you? You work kind of opposite the shifts, or do you work?
No, actually, so I'm Dr. Foster's colleague over in Riverbend, and so I'm a neurointerventionist, and so I'm a neurologist by training, and so I'm a stroke specialist. And so if Dr. Foster has a patient here in Florence who shows up with signs and symptoms consistent with stroke, then often myself or one of my colleagues will be on the phone with Dr. Foster to help guide treatment.
So the one you call at Riverbend would be?
Right.
Okay, cool. So let me add, before we get to the symptoms of a stroke, before we know if someone is possibly having a stroke, what are some of the causes of stroke?
Well, I let the neurologist answer that. It's his specialty.
So stroke is has lots of different causes, which makes it actually pretty complex to diagnose and to treat. Some of the most common reasons to have a stroke are because of an abnormal heart rhythm called atrial fibrillation, where you can form clots in the heart that can get pumped out and cause blockages in blood vessels anywhere, including up in the brain, which is a stroke. Other common reasons are to have plaque buildup in the blood vessels that lead up to the brain, particularly in the carotid arteries. And then there are other causes too. So if you have injuries to blood vessels, you have trauma that can cause strokes. Sometimes strokes are caused because you have a genetic predisposition or a hereditary tendency to form clots easily. But those tend to be pretty rare. But certainly atrial fibrillation and carotid disease are really big causes.
So a stroke can pretty much originate almost anywhere in the body, correct?
Well, I mean, a stroke specifically is something
But I mean, as far as the original, like a clot in the leg could come loose. Is that possible?
Generally not. Those would get stuck in the lungs.
Okay.
The clots that go to the brain are coming
from the heart.
The heart or from big vessels in the neck,
okay,
most likely.
So that's where it's all going to come
that's
from.
That's right. But there are, you know, the real besides those things that I mentioned, three big stroke risk factors are high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, and then, of course, you have to add cigarette smoking to that. So those are all big
risk
factors.
Why do you have to add cigarette smoking? Everybody knows.
Everybody knows, but it's a lot easier to talk about than do something about.
Right.
So sometimes, stroke is quite variable in how you deal with it, depending what the cause of the stroke is. And so hopefully we can talk a little bit more about the treatments.
Absolutely. Well, and we will get that. We got quite a bit of time here, but right. I want to kind of get started. Just kind of educate people on what's going on in their bodies at the time. Seems like, now you guys will be able to correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like we've kind of changed what the diet and everything is in order to avoid high cholesterol. Is that kind of accurate? I mean, we know a lot more about processed foods now than we did 20, 30 years ago. We know more about, you know, fats and how important they are in the body. Is that something that people are doing the worst thing in order to have the high cholesterol? They're not doing the right dietary things?
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, certainly diet is a big part of the cholesterol issue, but there's a big genetic component. I mean, you can have people that could eat fatty food all their life, and their genetics are never going to, you know, give them a lot of bad cholesterol. And there's other people that eat pretty healthy and still have elevated cholesterol. So it's not a simple, oh, you eat this diet, you won't have to worry about cholesterol. It helps, but you can't say that's the answer to everything.
Yeah, that being said, you know, I think nutrition science is really tricky because there's always new stuff coming out. And I think these days some of the shift in the thinking is that maybe the fats are not the big enemy that we thought they were, and maybe it's things like refined sugar. And so when people ask me about diet, I give them a disclaimer that I don't think anybody really knows, but probably a reasonable rule of thumb is to avoid the processed stuff and everything in moderation.
Right.
One, isn't it true? I mean, like with everybody, I mean, like some pharmaceuticals work on certain people and they don't work on other certain people. I imagine it would be the same thing. Foods would probably be the same way. You have to find out what works for you in order to.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. We are going to get into some of the next I want to talk about is some of the symptoms, and then we'll get into some of the solutions for it, all right?
Okay.
All right, we are talking with Dr. Michael Wilder and Dr. William Foster with Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center on this edition of Doc Talk. We'll be back right after this.
The spirit of healing is Peace Health.
When I think about the spirit of healing, I think the most important thing is that it's a team effort and everybody's on the same page.
At the end of the day, all we really want to do is help people.
It's not just a business, it's a mission.
Peace Health continues to reach out and bring healthcare to people who otherwise wouldn't have it.
Healing, compassionate, joyful. That's what Peace Health is about.
Hear stories of our healing spirit at peacehealth.org.
You're not feeling well? You twist your ankle? Or you have that pain in your shoulder that just doesn't go away? There is an alternative to the emergency room. It's a Peace Health walk-in clinic. There's no appointment necessary, and you may have to wait, but you could see someone today. It's open 6 days a week in the 380 building just across from Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center. The Peace Health walk-in clinic, your local health partners.
On this edition of Doc Talk, we're talking with Dr. Michael Wilder and Dr. William Foster, Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center, and we talked a little bit about kind of the precursors up into stroke. Now, let's talk about what we see as symptoms of a stroke. When someone comes in, what are some of the things that people need to be aware of that might trigger that their knowledge that, hey, I'm having a stroke?
One of the biggest ones is weakness or numbness, typically on one side of the body. You know, sudden onset of weakness or numbness is affecting just one side of your body. One arm, one leg, arm and leg, face and arm, just the face. That's one big area of, you know, a symptom. Another one would be trouble speaking, you know, finding words, getting the words out.
Does one come before another? In other words, or does it just random? It's like it could be either one.
It could be either or both, some combination thereof.
Because I remember someone saying that, you know, it's like, well, the first thing you do is to maybe try to do multiplication or something. Do something different. You had to see if you're able to.
That would not be very much of a stroke symptom. Not the big ones we're concerned about.
Right.
Sure. So there's an acronym we use. So it's FAST, F-A-S-T. So F stands for face. So if your face is droopy. A stands for arm if your arm is weak. S stands for speech. And T stands for time. So time is extremely important in stroke treatment. So we have all these treatments we can do, but it it doesn't help unless we get patients to us quickly enough. So patients have to be aware of their symptoms, that it could be a stroke, and they have to realize that you need help right away. So FAST, fast.
Yeah, because any minutes or, you know, prolonged period of time can mean worse damage or even death.
Exactly. So brain tissue dies very quickly when it doesn't get the blood supply it needs.
And so with these symptoms, I guess people will know when that's happening. But I hear of people that don't go, but this is just, you know, it's not a big deal. It's just something I'm dealing with. I mean, just give us the idea of how important it is to get them as quickly as possible. I know that people out there are going, I've had this before or something. And people can have mini strokes, right?
Right.
Without even realizing.
Exactly. And, you know, the technical term for a mini stroke is a TIA, a transient ischemic attack. It has all the same symptoms of a stroke, except it resolves rather quickly. And they are major warning signs of a what we might call a big stroke. I mean, people can have TIAs and never have a stroke. People can have a stroke without having a mini stroke. But if you've had a mini stroke, whoa, your chances of having a big stroke vastly increase.
So it's sort of like a tremor of an earthquake.
You know,
I mean, you get that, and that's the means that something bigger could be coming along the line.
Yeah, it's your opportunity to get in there and try to figure out what's going on and address it before it becomes a permanent disability.
Is it true that once someone has had a stroke, they're more likely to have another?
Statistically, you are at slightly higher risk of having a stroke if you've already had one in the past. But another thing I tell patients is that, you know, we work very hard to figure out what the cause of the stroke was and address that underlying cause. And as long as that underlying cause is adequately treated and addressed, then that brings the risk of a second stroke way, way down.
And you were saying how it should be pretty obvious to people that they're having a stroke. And the answer to that is no. I mean, they'll say, well, my hand was just a little bit clumsy. Maybe I slept on it wrong. You know, they keep on dropping their coffee cup. And they might attribute it to a pinched nerve in their neck or, you know, I slept on my arm wrong. But those very likely could be due to a stroke.
And it's not something you want to see. Well, let me see if it goes away.
Right. I'd much rather have, from an emergency room perspective, have people err on the side of coming in thinking I'm having a stroke. And we see lots of people coming in, I think I'm having a stroke. That's their chief complaint, not, oh, my arm is weak or my leg won't work or my face is drooped. Their words to me are, I thought I was having a stroke. And I go, well, why did you think you were having a stroke? And they said, well, I just kind of felt weak. Weak all over. That's probably not a stroke. But I'd rather have them come in and me assess them. But we see a lot of people to say, well, I feel a little bit confused over the last few days. Maybe I thought I had a stroke. Yes, that could be a stroke. Probably not. You know, just some mild confusion with no other symptoms.
Yeah, I agree with that. Stroke has a lot of mimics, and so that's part of what makes it challenging to diagnose. So sometimes people with bad migraines can get weakness that can look like a stroke, but it's not a stroke, it's a migraine. Sometimes if people have a seizure, then afterwards they can have weakness that can mimic a stroke. And so it's even for physicians, it can be challenging. So you need to do the workup in the emergency department, and often that may include scans to help figure out what's going on. But I totally agree with Dr. Foster. Much better to err on the side of caution. If you think you're having symptoms, get in, because there are treatments available and it can really help reduce your effect from the stroke.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break here and we'll come back and let's talk about some of those treatments that are available out there and some of the ways that people can keep it from happening again and maybe, you know, recognize it more quickly. All right, we're talking with Dr. Michael Wilder and Dr. William Foster, Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center, on this edition of Doc Talk. It's Stroke Awareness Month. We want everyone to be aware of the symptoms and the treatments. More Doc Talk right after this on Coast Radio.
You're not feeling well? You twist your ankle? Or you have that pain in your shoulder that just doesn't go away? There is an alternative to the emergency room. It's a Peace Health walk-in clinic. There's no appointment necessary, and you may have to wait, but you could see someone today. It's open 6 days a week in the 380 building just across from Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center. The Peace Health Walk-In Clinic, your local health partners.
The spirit of healing is Peace Health.
When I think about the spirit of healing, I think the most important thing is that It's a team effort, and everybody's on the same page.
At the end of the day, all we really want to do is help people.
It's not just a business, it's a mission.
Peace Health continues to reach out and bring healthcare to people who otherwise wouldn't have it.
Healing, compassionate, joyful. That's what Peace Health is about.
Hear stories of our healing spirit at peacehealth.org.
On this edition of Doc Talk, we're talking Stroke Awareness Month with Dr. Michael Wilder and Dr. William Foster. And we kind of talked about the history of stroke and kind of what causes stroke in the body. Now let's talk about some of the things that are out there that can help people recover from strokes more quickly. Let's talk about the history of strokes and the history of how they were treated in the past.
Well, if you go back far enough, I mean, we didn't do much for them because there wasn't much we could do. You had a stroke and you were left with other deficit. Your arm didn't work. You couldn't talk. And it was all about rehab. But there was really no acute interventions, you know, to back up or reverse any of the damage done acutely. It was all about rehab. But then how long ago did TPA first?
It was 1996. It was approved by the FDA.
So TPA is a drug given intravenously that breaks up clots. We use a similar type of medicine for heart attacks. If you have a blockage in one of the vessels on your heart, one of the things we can do is give a medicine to break up that vessel and get blood flowing again. And in 1996, that medicine was approved to be used for strokes. And so someone's come into the ED with signs and symptoms consistent with a stroke. We've gotten a CAT scan of their head because a small number of strokes can be due to bleeding in the brain, where you've actually had bleeding. Obviously, we're not going to be giving a clot-busting drug to that because that would make the bleeding worse. So we get a CAT scan. It shows no evidence of bleeding. Then they would potentially be a candidate for this clot-busting drug.
What's the time frame from when they come in the door to when they might be getting that drug?
Well, that's a very important question. And that's, you know, as he went back to that fast, you know, the T is important. And currently we have 4.5 hours from when you were last known well, not from when you came in the door, but, you know, the spouse saying, yeah, at 10 o'clock I saw him and he was fine. And then I came back a half an hour later and he's not moving his arm and his speech is slurred. We would go from that 10 o'clock time that he was last seen, and we need to have that drug going in within 3 to 4.5 hours. After that, the risk of bleeding increases enough that we don't give that medicine. So 4.5 hours from when last seen well.
So a clot is just a clump of coagulated blood. Is that kind of what it is, or is it platelets? What does that consist of?
So clots can be made of different materials. So fibrin is a protein-like substance that can make a more organized clot. They can be platelet-rich clots. So they kind of differ depending where the clot comes from.
And TPA can work on all these different types of clots?
It works better on some than others. And size of the clot is really important, too, and size of the vessel affected. So as Dr. Foster said, you know, the majority of strokes are ischemic strokes, which means that you have a blockage of a blood vessel and you're not getting enough blood flow to the brain. A smaller percentage of those of strokes are hemorrhagic, which means there's a rupture of a blood vessel and bleeding into the brain, so too much blood. So of the ischemic strokes, of the kinds where you're not getting enough blood flow, you have two flavors of stroke, essentially. You have the large vessel stroke and the small vessel stroke. The small vessel strokes tend to be caused by high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, and those tend to respond pretty well to this TPA drug. They're typically not the most severe of the kinds of drugs. The large vessel stroke, where we're talking about a clot that traveled from somewhere that's a big clot that's lodged in one of the main arteries feeding the brain, that kind of stroke doesn't respond as well to TPA because it's a large burden of clot. This is why we've developed this new technology and new therapy for this kind of stroke. It's a catheter-based therapy. So it's a minimally invasive therapy where a small tube called a catheter, it's about the size of a pencil lead, is threaded into the artery in the leg. And then using radiology techniques, we advance that catheter all the way up through the body and into the brain to where the clot is. And then we have a little device or a suction catheter that we can use to actually extract the clot. And so this technology, we've been working on it for many years, but we've had some very, very exciting times in stroke care starting in 2015 when we got we had several large studies published in the New England Journal of Medicine that really validated this thrombectomy procedure, which is the removing the clot. So that really established thrombectomy and cath lab treatment as a mainstay in stroke treatment. So it was the first new advance we had in stroke treatment since 1996. So basically a 20-year gap where all we had was TPA. But now we're in a new era where these largest and most severe kinds of strokes can be significantly reduced by taking the patient to the cath lab and treating them.
So here's a question that is on my mind, and you guys can probably more easily answer it than, you know, me looking up on Google or something like that. But why is the best course going into the leg? Isn't there a place closer to go than all the way down? It seems like you got to travel a long way.
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, there's a couple reasons for going in the leg. One is we use a fairly large sheath to access the artery there, we puncture the artery over the femoral head, which is a bone, the leg bone where it connects to the hip. And so if we need to stop the bleeding at the puncture site, we have the bone to compress against. Uh-huh. So it's a safer place to do the puncture. You could conceivably puncture in the neck. But the problem there is you only have access to one of the blood vessels that feeds the brain. There are actually four. And if you're doing it from down below, you have access to all four vessels that feed the brain if you need to get in there.
And I'm guessing that there's a micro-sized camera in there, well, that helps you through that? Or is it more through CAT scans and that you...
Well, we use something called fluoroscopy, which is it's essentially an X-ray film. And so we have the catheter itself is a hollow tube, and we inject X-ray contrast through that. And as the X-ray contrast travels through the blood vessels, we film it with cameras that are rotating around the patient. Mm. And we watch on monitors as that contrast flows through. We map out all the blood vessels. And some of the technology we use is something called road mapping. So we make a map of the blood vessels and we superimpose that on our live image so we can steer the blood vessels up through this map that we've created to get to the clot.
Boy, Hippocrates would be like, wow, you'd be like freaking out with all this stuff. I know. That's some pretty amazing technology, though.
Well, and it really works. It's super effective. But again, we can do all these great things, but if the patient doesn't get to us quickly enough, it doesn't make any difference because the therapy won't help. Mm-hmm. So now recently we have new data to support treating these patients with the catheter up to 24 hours from when they were last seen well. Now, granted, this is for the large vessel occlusion type strokes, which is a subset of the ischemic strokes. So it's not all patients are going to be eligible for this, but for those that are, it's very effective.
So what about the damage to the brain, or what kind of damage occurs over the longer periods of time? I guess with the smaller clots, is it the same amount of damage as a larger clot, or is it the other way around?
Well, it'd be the same amount of damage. It's just how big an area of brain has been involved. So if it was one of those smaller vessels that got blocked from, you know, high blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes, your symptoms might be minimal because it's just a small part of the brain that's affected. It might just be your hands a little bit weak, or, you know, you have a little bit of a facial droop and slightly slurred speech. And so those get TPA. Often the medicine opens it up and they do fine. At least here at Florence, all the patients that came in with signs and symptoms of a stroke, we got that CAT scan, no bleeding. It's been less than 4.5 hours. We give them TPA and we're sending them immediately over to Riverbend because TPA doesn't work all of the time. And if it didn't work, there'd still be the option possibly of going in with the catheter to take out the clot. If it's been more than 4.5 hours, we can't use the TPA. So they're all going over to Riverbend for consideration for the catheter to pull out the clot. And one thing that will happen when they get to Riverbend is they'll do another type of CAT scan, which looks at what part of the brain is already kind of dead from that stroke and what part of the brain around that is injured but not dead yet. And that area will determine whether they'd be a candidate. If everything's already dead, going in and taking the clot out, it's not going to help. But if you have a small area that's dead and a much bigger area that's kind of injured, taking the clot out could really help that area and reduce the symptoms.
So, and I'm guessing by the fact that you're using the term dead, that tissue's never coming back.
Typically, no. So if it is completely infarcted is the medical term for it. If it's then it typically doesn't regenerate. But patients often get recovery, but often that recovery is because other parts of the brain are learning to take over some of that function. But as Dr. Foster was saying, what we do before we take a patient to the cath lab, we do determine that they are actually going to benefit from the procedure. And we make sure that they have salvageable brain tissue, and so that's a scan that we'll do up at Riverbend once the patient is sent to us.
Now, how long does that procedure take? If you go with a catheter in there, how long does that take?
It depends, and it can be anywhere from half an hour to a couple hours, and it just really depends on the patient's anatomy. And some clots are harder to pull out than others. Again, getting back to clot composition, and that's it matters what the clot is made out of and how easy it is to get out of there.
Well, I'm guessing too that the condition of the person's arteries when you're going in also has a lot to do with it. You know, if they have a lot of plaque or if they have a lot of obstruction or anything in there, you have to be very much more careful.
Exactly. Yeah, it just it makes it more complicated. That's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Is there anything new coming up on the horizon that's maybe, you know, that people are looking at that may be the next best thing?
Well, you know, there are always new things coming out, and some really exciting things that are happening around the country and around the world are mobile stroke units, where there's actually a CAT scan in the back of an ambulance. So you can identify the patient very early in the field, get that CAT scan, and get treatment started in the field. Currently, we can't do that, but we're always looking for ways to shorten the time to treatment and shorten the delays. And so we've done a lot of work here with our EMS here locally to use some new some new clinical scales where we're assessing the patient and identifying patients who probably will benefit from cath lab therapy in the field by EMS. So that EMS, they can radio in, they say, hey, you know, this patient has these signs and symptoms that are very likely to be a large vessel occlusion. Now at the hospital, we can get a jump on getting the cath lab ready and having everybody in place and ready to go once the patient gets there. And so, you know, all the things that we do to try to shorten the time, this is all pretty new. And so we're learning here.
And here in Florence, that can mean the ambulance bypassing RED and going directly there, because if it looks like, you know, based on some very simple, you know, bedside tests they do about how significant their weakness is on one side and how their eyes look, you know, they can have a fair idea this is a large vessel. We're not going to, you know, as we said, the TPA medicine doesn't work as well for those. Why stop here? That's probably not adding an hour on to their time. The ambulance will take them directly over to Riverbend, or maybe meet the helicopter partway to get them there even sooner.
All right, we just got a couple minutes left. So one thing we didn't touch upon is age group. Is there an age group? Is there a type? Is there some person more susceptible than the other? You mentioned genetics, but you know, can a person that's 25 years old have an issue with strokes?
Absolutely. And so while it's not as common in younger people, it tends to happen more in older folks. It can affect any age group at all. And because, as we mentioned before, there's so many different potential causes for strokes, If you have a concern that there's a stroke going on, get in and get evaluated, regardless of the age.
What about if they have family history? Is that a precursor?
That is a risk factor for sure.
All right. So people should know their history, know their family history. Yeah. It's a good thing. And know what to do. Again, it's FAST. Give me that again.
FAST, face, arm, speech, time, and then call 911.
Right.
Don't drive yourself in. Call 911.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't be a good idea. That's a good call there. All right, we're talking with Dr. William Foster and Dr. Michael Wilder at Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center. It's Stroke Awareness Month, so folks, just be ready. Know the symptoms, know the signs, and be ready to act as soon as you notice something like that. And you may save yourself a lot of trouble in the long run. Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Doc Talk, presented by Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center. For more information on the program and services provided, visit peacehealth.org.